This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2015, held at Faith Builders on August 4 through 7.
All right, good morning. Let's pray. So, gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for this day, all your blessings to us. Father, would you let the words of our mouths and the meditations of our heart be acceptable in your sight, our strength and our Redeemer. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Good morning. It's great to be with y'all this morning. In my personal opinion, you're some of the best people in the whole world. You're going to be the people that are going to teach the teachers, and some of you are going to teach people that are going to be ordained, and mothers and fathers, and the kingdom of God. And, you know, when we were looking at the solar system this morning, saying, well, maybe we're not that significant. I really appreciated everything you said. I'll disagree with that one thing. Y'all, and yes, I'm from the South, so I'm just going to say it, accept it. I'll say use if it would make you feel better. But y'all are going to shape the world and move the world. Some of the bad things you do might, but the good things that you do are going to just, they're literally going to change the world and God's kingdom. And so I count it a privilege to be with you. I love to be with Christians. I love to be with Mennonite Christians, and probably my favorite subcategories are Christian Mennonite musicians and teachers. I'm a lifelong musician and a career teacher, and I just think those people are just a blast. Let's just be real. We're all a little bit kooky. We're a little weird. You know, when I'm at work, I see the Minibarn guys, and I'm sitting there sweating with children screaming and playing Ultimate Frisbee thinking, why are those guys not over here teaching? And they're probably looking at me thinking, what on earth is he doing? He's a grown man. And anyways, and they're making 20 times more than me anyways. But I just think what we do is awesome. I want to bless you as best as I can with the ability to love your job. And for you that are able to do it as a career for 30 or 40 years. And I think one hindrance to that is obviously classroom management. It can just be a disaster, but I don't think it has to be, and I really meant what I said on this title, Joyous Classroom Management. Instead of, no, really, I put, are you joking? Well, I'm totally not joking. I've struggled with it in my day, and we'll talk about that a little bit, and some of you new teachers, I don't know, have you had the nightmares yet? The dream of just going in there, and nobody does what you say. Nobody cares, and little children have more power than you. The good thing about me is that everybody has more power than I am. I think some of the older girls that I teach probably beat me in arm wrestling because I'm kind of a small person. So anyways, so forget the power play. But I believe in this. You can love teaching, and it can be a joy to you, especially the classroom management. Here's a goal. This isn't the only goal we have. Okay, we've got lots of goals, but this is a goal. I would like the students, to learn a lot. And when I say learn a lot, I don't mean just learn the books. I mean go deep and make good grades and be able to talk about the school subjects. I like to, as best as I can in my part, create interesting people, all right? I would like to have people that can talk about the solar system. I'd like to put out Mennonite doctors and Mennonite and Brethren veterinarians. All right. And I'd like to have our people that are in construction be able to sit down at lunch and talk about theology and love it. There was a man in North Carolina. I was born in North Carolina. And he was the owner of the bulk food store in the Amish community, and the rumors are that he would sit down and talk to people about literature. He would like to talk about Faulkner. And so, you know, that's a pretty neat testimony. Talk to the Amish bulk food guy about classic literature. I guess Faulkner, what do you think, Esther? Would that be classic, or is it too? Yeah, okay, we count him as classic. And so, learn a ton and have loads of fun doing it. So the model that my wife and I have strove for, is a very structured school where we really learn a lot and it feels painless the whole time. Have you ever gotten a shot in your mouth and the doctor goes like that? and a dentist, and then he puts it in, it doesn't hurt. When I was a kid, which wasn't that long ago, they just put the needle in, it would hurt so bad, and then they put the other one in and turn it. Nowadays, they figured if you go like this, I think we can have such a good time at school that the students love learning, and algebra's great, and anatomy's great. And my girls defeat my boys in anatomy. They do a much better job finding the heart and sticking their fingers through the heart valves and have them go up like that. All right? So I believe in this. So I'd like to give you some hints today of things to do. I'd like to give you some tricks when you get in a weird situation and you might not know what to do. But before that, I think we could structure the whole thing out. I honestly think 92% of all your problems are non-existent before they start. Can I answer everything, or can anybody in here? No, of course not. Some students, no matter what you do or what structure you have in place, learn how to break rules that you never made. I know it must be in my genetics because I have a son that can do that. I can give him so many rules in our house, and he can do the most horrible, weird things. And he said, "Dad, you never told me not to." And I'm like, "You're right." And you know, you just can't say you can never do anything stupid. Okay? That's a terrible way to teach. Okay? But for the most part, I think we could structure things so that there's really not that much play to get in trouble and enjoy school as well. All righty. So, I am a lifelong music student. I studied French horn in college, and I was a professional French horn player for a living, and I decided that I wanted to be a teacher. The reason I'm telling you this is I had to study the French horn for years to be a professional. I've been a voice student now. I take voice lesson for a number of years, and you know what's amazing to me about these really, really good teachers is they usually have like a handful of things that they tell you over and over. And after years, you say, "Oh, I see what you're saying. You've been telling me the same thing." And they're like, "Yeah, duh." All right? These two things are 98% of classroom management. It would be really fun to overcomplicate this. And maybe some of you are like, "Well, I guess I can leave now." Well, you're welcome to if you want to. But if we could deal with these two things, rules and relationships, classroom management's wonderful. Now, I don't say this in theory. I say it in practice. And I've tried both of these. And I think I've tried both of them apart from each other. But I think a great example of rules and relationships are Christ, the perfect example of everything. We have the rules, and you say, "Well, no, the New Testament, we don't have rules." You bet we have rules. We have rules that are so strict on the Sermon on the Mount that they are rules to control your thoughts. Okay, that's pretty serious. Christ says, "Well, forget adultery. It's what you think. That's my rule." All right. Forget murder. It's what you say to your friends. Okay? So Christ is there with rules. And what's way better, as in Hebrews, about Christ than the Old Testament is that relationship is so close. So we have such a great model there. We have Christ in his Sermon on the Mount. This is what you need to do to be in my kingdom. And we have this relationship with Christ. The high priest is right there. God's right there. That's awesome. So I would like to talk about these two things, and there'll be a little more at the end, but I think if you could get a good handle on these, I think it would be a blessing to you. All right. You know, have you ever heard about the grace camp and the judgment camp, mercy and judgment? We always say you're either a mercy person or judgment, or blah. I think we should be both. Same thing. We tend to have rules people. They're going to have a structured classroom, and they're just going to sit there all day with perfect hair and perfect clothes in a structured classroom. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. They're probably going to have pretty good classroom management. All right? Some of the students might chafe under it, but it does work. All right? And then we have the relationship people. So let's look at some hyper examples of these a little bit. We're going to start with the relationship guy. We have Mr. Relationship. Let's all be honest, especially if you're like under the age of 30, we really don't want the students to not like us. It's very important in our brains that they kind of think we're cool, all right? And y'all can just look at me and go, "I've never thought that. Oh, come on." All right? You know, when you get married or when you're pushing 22, you start realizing maybe it's a little harder to be cool than it used to be, assuming that you really were cool in the first place. And you start looking back thinking, well, it kind of feels good if some of those more youthful people would accept me and kind of like me. And so when you start pushing 30, you're looking at 40. I'm 45, if you're wondering. And you're realizing my ability to be cool is shrinking away. And so you start focusing on that. And you know what? I guess it's okay. We've all done it. I've done it. And we seek from those ages to try to manage the classroom a lot of times by having the students like us. And it can be effective. To really work, you're going to need to stay in that classroom a good 2, 3, 4 years before the whole they like me and I'm cool and they'll do what I want because they think I'm cool, you know, which really, it just isn't the best way to go. Do you have to be, you know, super hyper, you know, judgment teacher guy, doctor or whatever? No, but this isn't the best way. My first couple of jobs I had, my first long-term job was in a Christian school of about 500 people. And, you know, I tried the thing, and I was younger, and I tried to relate to them, and it was kind of a headache. Eventually, they feel like you're their friend. And you treat your friend differently than you would your teacher. Does that make sense? So I just want you to remember that when you go that way. And on, you know, on clothing, I know we're Mennonites, and we hate to talk about clothing. If you dress too much like them, you kind of become like them, and the lines are blurred, all right? And they just start treating you like that. When I was about 33, I had a student, 32, I had a student, and he said, "Mr. Swanson, I'm sorry for the way I treated you. I've got to realize that you're not my buddy." And you know what? I kind of wanted the students to be my buddy, and obviously it didn't really work out that way. So, and we'll talk about relationships. Y'all need to have wonderful, great relationships with the students, but they're not your buddy. Now, if you're 19 and they're 17, you know, that's tricky, all right? But it can be done. And we also have, sorry, ladies, these are misters, but we also have Mr. Rules. Drill sergeant guy here. That was one of my favorite slides. Anyways, and, you know, it's all about the structure. And I don't care if you don't like me. That's fine. I'm in charge, and you're going to do what I say. All right? And so I guess we probably don't have many teachers that behave like that. But it's still a sweet picture of Mr. Rules. And so, anyway, so I'd like to talk about structure, the rule side of things. I'd like to talk about relationship side of things. And I think it will clear up some things, maybe for some of you very new teachers. For some of you older ones, hopefully some other things might make sense. So, all righty. your outline is fairly close to mine. We had to have these outlines ready about a week ago. And, you know, I've been thinking about what I was going to say to y'all for about 6 months. And it's amazing in the last week how many things start going in that I've got to tell you. So my outline has changed just a little bit. I'm married. I have a wonderful wife, Dina. She's also presenting here this week. And we have a pretty good relationship. We're very open with each other. We've always talked about everything. And sometimes we have irritations with each other. And I hope it's less than it used to be. And I think part of the problem with that, with the irritations, is that we just don't share things with each other and say, "That really bothers me. Would you please never do that again?" And that's okay. You know, my wife thinks the clipping of fingernails is the most disgusting thing in the whole world. Now, you're probably thinking, well, doesn't everybody have to? Well, yeah, they do. But she just doesn't like it when I do it in front of her. She just thinks it's just abhorrent. And so, you know, she could either say, "Jeff, would you please never do that in my presence again? I just think it's gross." Or she could just, every time I do it, just in her soul hate me. All right? So which do you think is better? Well, obviously it's better for her to just say, "Jeff, can you not do that?" And then I can make a choice and say, "No, I'm going to do whatever I want." Or I can say, "Sure, honey, I don't want to gross you out. I want you to think I'm great." All right? And so since you're probably reading this already, unclear expectations in your marriage or in the classroom, they create insecurity. If I pick at my students all the time for things that they don't know that are coming, like you're talking. Well, Mr. Swanson, they're thinking, "You never told me I can't talk." Well, I'm just thinking, isn't it obvious to you that we're in school? Don't talk. And I'm getting mad and hating this student, okay? they're a little insecure. They don't know what goes on, all right? It creates frustration for teachers and students. The teachers are upset because the students are naughty, okay? The students are upset because the teacher's upset because they're naughty, because the teacher never told them what's naughty and what's not naughty, okay? It's a guessing game for the sensitive student. Have you ever had a student that will repent to you sincerely, like 5 or 10 times a day? You know, they're sweet students. It's hard to know, you know, why they're doing that and what's going on in their brain, but they're just sweet, precious students. And, you know, they don't know what's right and wrong. You know, at least give them some structure so they can repent of things that they know that were wrong. And then party time for the mischievous, all right? Don't we have mischievous students? Yes, we do. If there's no structure, they're just going to go nuts. And you know what? It's fair for them to go nuts. It's like I said, you can't tell your students, you're not allowed to do anything dumb. Anything that you would think was bad, don't do that and we'll get along. Well, wow, that's kind of a gray area. Clear expectations. Security and safety. For me, a safe school, if you're in a small school or a safe classroom, if you have 6 different classes a day for that 50 minutes they're in there, is priceless. And I'll talk about that in some other sessions, but I think that students should be able to come in class and be like, I love school when I'm here. I'm so glad. I feel so safe with my teachers. I love the subject matter. And I'm going to bask in security and safety for the next 6.5 hours. And you know what? If you do your jobs, all right, have help from the school board, okay, and some supportive parents, I think students will be so happy to get there, and I think they'll stay inside and talk to you and hang out at school until the minute their mother gets there and then maybe 5 minutes after she's there because they love school. That's the way I want it to be. If they have expectations and they know what's right and wrong, they're going to feel better about the whole thing. Teachers focus on teaching, not firefighting. You know what firefighting is? Okay, this student's naughty. I got to go help. I got to deal with that. Okay, now I'm mad. But I'm a good actor, so I'm going to act like I'm happy, but I'm freaking out in here. Okay, their parents are mad at me now. They're mad at me. They're going to be mad at me on Sunday morning. Okay? Okay, I'm going to try to teach now. Hi, everybody. It's so good to see you. There's another problem. I got to go put out this fire. Okay, what a disaster. Okay, now I'm really upset. That should not have happened. Now I'm really freaking out in my mind. Okay? But I'm going to come back to you and say, hi, darlings. We're going to do a really hard algebra lesson that you're not going to be able to do today. This is in your mind, of course. But I'm okay, all right? And it's terrible. I think that if there are clear expectations, you know, if Timmy's over here and he's knocking on the snake cage, okay, he knows he's not supposed to, and you said, you're not supposed to knock on the snake cage. We'll talk about it later. It's done. That's all there was to it. He says, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. And you're like, all right? And the students focus on school. I want to focus on being a good teacher. You know, some of us have to study hard for our subjects, upper grades, lower grades. Y'all have to prepare. First and second grade teachers, why you study for 5 hours, 6 hours a day, I don't know, but it's universal. We all put too much time. Early grade teachers prepare and prepare and prepare. Upper grade teachers, just we study algebra and upper sciences all the time. I want to go in there and teach those subjects, all right? So, this is so important, all right? You know, a lot of you in your churches, you know exactly what you're expected to wear, right? And some of you might be like, oh, you know what? It sure makes it easy in the morning. You just know what you're supposed to do. It really is a blessing. You know, when they send young men off to the army, and they make them wear this shirt and these pants and these boots, those guys come home and that's all they want to wear. They love it. They're part of the whatever the army thingy they're in, okay? And they're proud. So I think it's good to know exactly what's expected of you. When you create a structure in school, this is causing your students to obey, or it's causing your students to disobey. This is a very good thing. Can that make sense to any of you? So, if you have a rule that says you're never allowed to eat Cheerios for a snack at recess, okay? They can either obey it or they can disobey it. There's no gray. There's no problem with you. If they eat Cheerios at recess, they've disobeyed you and they're in trouble. And the good thing about it is they chose to disobey you. Now, you might be saying, well, it's bad to disobey. I agree that it's bad to disobey, but it's rather than swimming around in gray area. Does that make any sense? I just think it's wonderful for a student to do something wrong, and I'll tell you about how I discipline students, and to go, and before you even get there to say anything, they feel horrible. Now, if it's gray, and you're like, listen, we got to talk. You're kind of doing this, and it's kind of wrong. I don't really like it, and it would make me feel better and kind of happy if you wouldn't do this anymore. And they're just like, okay, just go, what are you, ugh. All right? So this is worth more than you may realize. A good structure, they're choosing to obey it or disobey it, and it's as simple as that. Really don't need any conversation, you know, about it. And the students who chose to disobey, a lot of them afterwards will say, I disobeyed you, Mr. Swanson, and I'm sorry. I just did it. You know what? That's really effective in church relationships and marriage relationships. You know, just say to your wife, I'm sorry, I messed up. I've taught my students and my children that. You know, if somebody ever comes up to you and says, listen, you disobeyed the church standards, it's so easy for you to say, I did, I'm sorry. What am I going to say now? I have no words to say. You just repented. It's so easy, and it's lovely, and it works so wonderful in relationships. And it gives the children an opportunity to say that. I don't know you. My name's Jeff. It's good to meet you. So that wasn't a trick from, I don't even know where you're from or whatever. But does that make sense? It's just so cut and dry. All right. This is a book, a life-changing book for me, not a Christian man. It's The Essential 55. This is a man that won the Walt Disney Award for teaching, teaches bad children in bad schools. I shouldn't say bad children, lower economic situations, not a lot of money in these schools. I think he might have started his own school since then. And I have gleaned so much for him. In addition to his school's protocol for what they say you should do, he has 55 of his own rules for his own classroom. I believe he would teach the fifth grade. Okay? Now, some of you are like, that's impossible. No, it's not possible. If he can do it with those city children, we could do it with our Mennonite Anabaptist brethren children. Not? Now, I don't have 55 rules, but I have a pile more than normal. And that brings me, I do want to encourage y'all. In my situations, my school board has said, this is our handbook. This is what we expect everyone to do. Now, you may have your own classroom rules, and that's your protocol. And I check really everything with my school boards. And that way, you know, they know what's done. But I think most schools would be, you know, pretty willing to do that. You have to be within our school rules, but you can have your specific, you know, classroom rules. And so this man's just great. The children love him. It's strict. He has at least one rule that I hope I'll remember to tell you about later that has nothing to do with education or morality or anything. It's really just funny in his preference. It's awesome. I would encourage you to read this if you get a chance, and he has some others. But this one's great. 55 rules, and his students love him, and he has a wonderful situation. All right. I didn't mean to go there. Okay. Outlines. I'm going to tell you about some of my classroom rules. If you think they're heinous, all right, or unnecessary, then that's fine. I'm sharing with you my experience and what has worked. And I try in my outlines to leave a little room at the end, some blanks, for you to write some things that you would think of that come to your mind or that you already do so that we're interactive. Please ask questions. I love talking. And for the record on that, please talk to me at lunch or supper or any other time. I told you I love Mennonite singers and teachers. I just think they're awesome. So please, please talk to me. I mean, it's a blessing to me. I will remember many of your names after the first or second time and your faces. Many of you have seen it, music type things, but I haven't met all of you. But I remember faces. So anyways, all right. Structure number one, no talking. Some of you are like, well, no, duh. Some of you are like, well, I'm not so sure about that. If you say, well, this is what I do, and I got it from that guy, all right, as far as I know, the non-Christian guy. In my classrooms, my students may not speak the minute they walk into the classroom before school starts. They may not talk in school, all right? On Sunday, when they go into the school for Sunday school, right, they can do whatever they want. But 8:15 in the morning, they can't talk. They can stay outside and talk, okay? They can go to our fellowship hall, gym, whatever you want to call it. They can talk in there. They can't talk in the schoolroom, all right? They can't talk until school's over. They may raise their hand really anytime they want. I do have some structure with that. We'll talk about that. But they may raise their hand and ask questions, and they can't talk to each other. Some of you are smiling at me, and some of you are going, okay, that's fair. And I'll tell you why I stuck with it. As you get to know me, I want you to think about how many of my students you think actually come into the classroom on Monday morning, not able to talk, and instead of hanging out with their friends, sitting there in the school and do schoolwork. Some of you are probably like, nobody ever does that. There are quite a few. And you know what? What's even more surprising is after school, a lot of them stay in school and do school stuff, and they're not allowed to talk. All right? Some of them will sit in there and lunch. They can't talk in school at lunch either. They can go outside. They can eat in the fellowship hall. And, you know, at times I felt bad about it, and there's always an adjustment if you're not there. Rebellious students will hate you for a time, and their parents, all right? But for the most part, it's so much security. I finally realized, when in school is it appropriate for them to talk? Is it when I'm teaching, you know, science class, and the other three grades are doing their schoolwork? Our work in the last 6 years has been multi-grade. All right? Is it during a test? When they're doing their homework, when is it appropriate to talk at school? I don't see an appropriate time. All right? Now, yes, I have to answer a lot of questions, but it's so organized. It's wonderful. They get so used to it that the sweet younger children come up to me on Sunday morning in church, and they go, and I say, we're at church, it's okay. And they're like, okay, Mr. Swanson, I just want to put the hand down. Okay, they're okay with it. And we've taught at a few schools doing this in our time, and I've never had a school board, when I left a school, say, we're going to let them talk now. I think they've said, it's been two times the school boards have said, when you leave, I want it to stay like that, with a hand raising and no talking. Just think about it. What trouble can they get in if they really can't talk? And I still think some of you are looking at me like, you are an oppressive Nazi. Okay, that picture is you, isn't it? Okay, I love these children, and I can't tell you the fun and laughter we have. These children get me going so that I can't stop laughing. We have a wonderful time. It just so happens that they have to go like this. And it's awesome. You know, some of them will have a conversation with me, and they'll say, and I'll say, yes. And they'll say, and I'll say, go ahead. And they'll say, okay, Mr. Swanson. And I'll go, yes. And then they'll raise their hand again, and I'll say, okay. What? And they'll go, you know, what is Betelgeuse? And I'll say, you know, it's a large star, you know, how far away? And they'll raise their hand again. I try to encourage them that once the hand's up, that we have a connection and that we're talking together. But either way, and keep in mind, I have taught 3rd through 12th graders. The protocol, the system is the same for the 12th graders. This saves more hassle than you can ever imagine. And you know what? You know how long they chafe under no talking? About 2 days. What I do is before school starts, the first day of school, we usually put some warning tape up, all right, around the front door. I don't let them come in the school because I've spent so much time decorating the school, all right, and I don't want them to see it until they're in there. 1st through 12th graders, I haven't taught the 1st and 2nd, and I'll tell them all, which is for the new ones, we're going to go into school, and when you get into school, you may not talk. So they don't come in the school and talk, and then right before the first day of school, then go back out at 8:30 and say, okay, this is what we do. So they know we don't talk in school. It was established from the beginning, all right? And you know what? Little children that are three or four or five will come in the school, and they're like, they know it. It's tradition, and it works wonderfully. You all go about it however you want. It's worth $1 million. It really is. And I can't tell you the joy and fun I've had with these students, the tears I've had when we left them. I've never had anybody say, yes, they're gone, we can talk now. I just think that the order. Anyways, that's my big one. Okay, but I want to talk about some more things to help you. Never correct a teacher. Our students have a way of saying, Mr. Swanson, you messed that up. And, you know, that's just not appropriate. Would y'all say that to your pastor? Maybe some of you would. But wouldn't you go to your pastor and just say, I'm not exactly clear with what you said. Could you explain it different? And you know what your pastor might say? Oh, my word. I just said something wrong in front of the whole church. You know, you're right. And so I encourage the students to just find a way to say, Mr. Swanson, are you sure maybe that's not right? Now, some of you might be thinking, control guy here. Maybe I am. But it's so nice when they can communicate in a genteel way like that. It's a blessing. And you know what? When I do make a mistake and they say those things, you just laugh and say, yeah, you're right. The first mistake I've made all year, or the first mistake I've made in the past 10 minutes or something like that. No co-ed seating. Yeah, some will chafe after this. This is a place for safety. You know, I know we've got different settings, different schools, but it's night and day when there's appropriateness between the sexes, all right? Girls sit over here, guys sit over here. Yeah, there might be some crossover. Yeah, it gets uncomfortable when a cousin sit next to each other, and do you tell them they can't sit next to each other? I don't know. All right, sometimes I just say, can y'all just go a little bit? I know you're cousins, but we just want to keep the rules. It's such a huge blessing to have structure. We encourage no sir, no ma'am, yes sir, yes ma'am, or yes or no. We really discourage yeah. And the two things that I loathe are yeah, and one of our bad habits is I don't care. Oh, really? You really don't care? Would you like to play softball today or volleyball? Oh, I don't care. Oh. Do you realize what you're saying? I mean, that's such a loathsome, horrible, apathetic way to communicate in humanity. Just say, I don't prefer it. Either way. But we really encourage no, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. You know what a blessing it is? When our children go to Walmart or wherever they go, and they say, you have a nice day, and your student says, yes, ma'am. You know, people's eyes, it grows. I don't think it's going to promote any kind of pride. I don't think it's a blessing to the public. I think when our people, all right, and women, it's unmistakable usually that y'all are Anabaptist, you know. Men, it should be as well. When they see us in public and we answer adults with yes, ma'am, and no, ma'am, it's wonderful training. You know, somebody said once, when they see the headship veiling, they being those without, they see God. They just do. They just don't think something else. They see headship veiling, whether or not they know what a Mennonite is or anything, they see God. And I think that we should promote good language, all right, and appropriateness. No notes. I felt guilty in one of my schools because they couldn't talk. It worked so well, but I still felt bad for them that I let my students write notes for about 6 months. I just thought it would be a good transition. They just couldn't write edifying notes. You know, talk can be good or bad. It seems like notes just go bad. And finally, I had young students would find a note, and they'd say, Mr. Swanson, you know, the younger students with rules, and they're new, they tend to catch on a little quicker. They'd say, I found this note, and it's not good. And so I just say no notes. It just never turns out right. And on that, I will accept notes from any boy, and I think I will accept notes from any girl, I think maybe fifth grade and under. Guys, don't take notes from girls that are sixth grade and over. It just gets weird, all right? They can, you know, send them to your wife, you know. And I'm talking guys, I don't care. I'd say 50 years old and under. Don't take notes from girls. It's just weird. Say, thank you, I appreciate it. Can you just tell me? Or do you want to talk to my wife or something? If you're not married, you know, find a way out of it. But we got to keep appropriate boundaries, all right? It's just the way it is. No eye rolling. I know, you're controlling them now. But there's nothing like saying, you know, you got the answer wrong. I'd say we need to talk after school. That's so rude. And yeah, you're getting into attitude then, but why not just stop it at that? Usually they're not going to say, I didn't. I mean, sometimes they will say, well, I was just kind of rolling my head or something. No, you were eye rolling. And so deal with that. Some that I didn't have on there, I like to have animals in school, weird stuff, spiders and snakes, scorpions and lizards. It promotes gentleness. It just does. I know. You know, usually when I get to start these school years off, some of the boys will say, if that thing gets out, I'm going to kill it. You're really tough. You can kill a snake that moves, you know, 1 mile an hour. Big deal. You know, by the end of the year, most of those boys will be holding snakes and bringing me snakes from their yard. So anyways, that's why I like to keep them. Plus, I think they're interesting. They can't touch the animal cages. They knock on them. They break them. And it's just mean. And you know what? They walk through school and know exactly what to do. There's no guessing. One person at a time in the bathroom most of the time. You know, note writing and people in bathrooms. Why can't students find that edifying? Why is the bathroom a place to go and talk about things that you shouldn't? And it's not horrible stuff. I mean, y'all know that if taught. So I try to keep one person in the bathroom. Wash your hands in the bathroom, all right? I don't know why students like not to wash their hands. And for our boys, I haven't noticed it in the girls, but boy, our youth boys love to go in the bathroom and put on so much man perfume that the whole school stinketh. And the girls just don't do it. So sometimes we need rules that way. Do not touch the teacher's desks. I learned that in public school from my wife. They used to have a rule, you're not allowed to go in the teacher's office or teacher's desk. It's just appropriate. They just touch weird things and break stuff. I like to have dinosaurs on my desk and cars and puzzles and pictures of my wife and secret pens that only I can use. And so you might be thinking, that's just so much. It's just the structure. My students tend to know exactly what they can do in school and what they can't. And then everything else is quite free. So those would be structure rules. Let me see something here. All right. Not yet. Okay, routine. Most of you, especially I would say y'all that teach the first, second, third, fourth grade, probably have a wonderful structured routine. It's wonderful. Routine is such a great thing. I spent some time this summer singing in a choir, and we would travel, and we would have a routine that was fairly regular every day. It might be in different places, and you would have to have your toothbrush and your toothpaste put in the right place, and you'd have to have your hanging bag of clothes and your clothes in the right place, and then your stinky clothes in a different bag every day, and you would move. And, you know, you get home, and you have, like what is it the military has? Post-war syndrome or whatever, post-traumatic syndrome. And I get home, and I'm like, there's no structure. What do I do? Everything's is different. People love structure and routine. It's wonderful. Here's a rule that I learned from a man in his younger days at school. This saves so much time, teachers. When you're coming in from recess or PE, lunch, my students and this man's students are not allowed to get water from the water fountain. Now, you're probably thinking, well, that's cool. They're going to dehydrate. Well, we'll deal with that. How much time do we spend with students standing in that horrible line, and then they start counting? And then they've got the water buffalo guy that doesn't care about the counting, and he's water all over in his hair, and he's drinking, and it takes forever. It's too much. So I say either get one earlier in PE, which they never do, and I've allowed all our students to have water bottles in school. Very healthy. If they spill it on their desk, then it makes a mess that they can clean up. All right? But so I encourage water bottles. That saves so much time. And you know what? If they drink water on the way in, it's horrible because it's not that cardinal of a sin. But you punish them, and it happens very rarely. All right? Consistent deadlines for class and homework. I try to be this tough guy. I know, look at big me, the tough guy. But I try to be pretty tough with these things. You know, girls come up to me, especially girls that aren't making good grades, and they're like, I know it's due. Can I turn it in late? And it's, you know what I mean? Y'all know, it's torment in my mind. I've got to tell them, no, you're just going to have 10 points marked off of it or 50 points marked off of it. And on the other hand, I just want to say, just this one time, it's okay. Just this one time ruins your life. All right, it really does. I would tell them when their papers are due, and that's when they're due. School needs to start at the same time every day. For y'all that are in smaller schools, parochial-type schools, church schools, it's nice on Monday morning just to, you know what, they really like to stay out and hit the volleyball for an extra 5 minutes, and I can use the time because I didn't prepare this weekend. And so we'll start school at 8:35, and they'll all like me more anyways. It's just a bad idea because then they want to start school at 8:35 every day. I've heard of schools where some days they'll have recess all day long. And so to me, it's a nightmare because you're sitting there looking at students doing possibly bad things, and they're unstructured and bored and doing bad things, and they're bored all day. And so I'll let y'all think what you want, but I would never go for the PE all day. You know what I mean by PE, physical education, recess? I would never do it for half a day, and I would really rarely extend it. Sometimes I extend it, especially if my team's losing. But anyways, just so we can tie. But I rarely would do that. If you keep a consistent structure, every once in a while, twice a year, you can say, listen, y'all are great. I love you. And we're going to have 30 more minutes of PE, and we'll probably never do it again. So please don't ask. And you know what? They'll love you. And they'll say, this is great. And they won't ask. they'll wait again for another 6 months. So there is a place for it, but it should be a surprise. Please keep a regular schedule, all right? Keep them busy. This is part of structure. There's nothing like, especially if you have multi-grades or subjects, and some people get finished really soon, and they have nothing to do, and they're a nightmare, all right? You've got the guy that walks around. It takes him 45 minutes to use the bathroom because he starts on one end of the school and walks around the window side and along the wall, touching everything in between. And then he goes into the bathroom, and then he's in there 15 minutes, and then he comes out and walks along the other side of the room. All right, and it's just a distraction. So I say, can you provide creative things for them to do? These are kind of a double whammy. I brought some things to show you. Please buy these things. I don't have them for sale. This is gold. This teaches critical thinking. It's quite quiet. Boys especially like it. It's really hard to learn how to do. It takes you about 2 weeks, okay? And it's very satisfying when you get it done. It's a Rubik's Cube. They come with instructions, okay? The instructions are very hard to follow. When my students finish their work, they're allowed to do a Rubik's Cube. You know what? They all start finishing. No, I shouldn't say that all. Many of them start finishing their work on time or early so they can do this and not talk and be quiet. It's gold. If I gave you the instructions, all of you that have never done this, and said, you may do this and see if you can do it by the end of the week, I don't think any of you would do it. It took me days with the instructions. I had a third and a sixth grader, fourth and sixth grader last year to learn how to do it, and they could finish the thing with no instructions in about a minute 20. It's pretty awesome. This thing is gold. If they're done, and there are a few of them done, they may ask you if they can play games and then use sign language with each other because we can't talk and play take one, bananagrams. You familiar with it? They can be very quiet with this, okay? I have groups of five or six. They want to finish their work, and I have them do it in good order and play bananagrams. My students have learned many Greek letters so that you can have two-letter words that start with X, all right? The solfege, the shape notes, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, all counts, all right? But not re's, fi's, and c's. Those don't count. You can only use the normal notes of the scale. My students look up letters that start with Q and don't have a U in them. All right, it's wonderful. So they're finishing their work on time. They're busy, but it's good. And their vocabulary is going out the roof. Did you know that QI is a word? The definition of it on the internet is a word to use in Scrabble that makes people really mad, but it really does mean something. It does have a meaning. Traffic jam, rush hour. Have you guys heard of rush hour? It's a game where you set these little cars up. This is a little loud, all right? Set these cars up in the order that they tell you to. There are little cards in the bottom, and this red guy is trapped, and he has to come out this door. And so once you set all these cars up, you can only move them side to side, and you can't take them off. It takes forever, and it's hard. It's a little loud. It's gold. It is gold. For y'all that live anywhere near Lancaster County, these things abound at Ken's Joys and such, and Goods and Weavers, and they're gold. Walmart and Target have gotten really smart to these kind of educational toys as well. Your students need to read. When your students become readers, because they love it, they're going to change. Their math is going to change. Their behavior is going to change. They're going to talk to you different. It's going to be awesome. So the benefits from reading when they're done to your classroom management is they're quiet. And the second benefit is that they are quiet. The third benefit is they are becoming disciplined. The fourth, they are increasing their vocab. The fifth is they will start finishing their work early to do something very productive, which is reading, and they are quiet. All right? Boys love books that have to do with animals. Everybody, seventh grade and under, loves to read Christian Light publications, Sunday school thingies. Do you know what I'm talking about? Partners, those type of things. You know what I'm talking about? I ask if we could have a set ordered for the school so I could always have one. You know how they always, you can order them? Most of you all would have those. You know what I'm talking about? What are the other ones? Partners and what else? Companions? Anyways, all those CLE things, they're really written well. I'm always impressed with them. The students love them. Why should we not have edifying things there? All the missionary stories with the Millers, they should be there. Chick tracks, You make sure you agree with the theology that are in there, and the students will devour them and start asking you about salvation and heaven and hell. It's a blessing. They love to read tracts. All right? They need to read. Last one there we have is fun rules. That Ron Clark guy has a rule that in his classroom, nobody might ever have Doritos of any kind. He says it's a meaningless rule, but it's fun. If we can make fun out of these things, it really is quite great. Okay. I have two punishments. You can disagree with me on this or not. It's worked wonderfully, and I don't want to change it. I came from a public school system. I will not spank your children. I will not touch them. All right? If the little boys are sad, I may hug them. All right? And I'll shake the girls' hands. I'm not going to spank anybody's child. I have two rules. It's really one and a half. My rule is, if you disobey one of my rules, my punishment, you have to stay in for recess or PE. That's it. You're going to hear lots of different ones for different occasions. That works wonderfully for a second grader, and it works great for Mr. Softball 12th grader. And that's all it is. Now, if they're continually naughty, I'll go to my second rule, which my second punishment, which really is I go to the school board and their parents and let them deal with it. I'm not going to fight it out with the student. There's no power struggle with me. I'm in charge, and they're not. So we're not going to duke it out. So if it's a one-time thing, a daily thing, they miss recess. And, you know, this is the way it usually goes. Carrie, my friend here, she accidentally talks in class. And so I go up and I say, Carrie, I'm really sorry. And she busts out crying. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to reprimand her. She knows what happened. And I say, I'm so sorry. You broke the rule and you're going to have to stay in for PE. I don't have to make fun of her or anything or berate her. She knows what she did. And it's done. And she sits there and cries for 20 minutes and it's all over. And she probably never do it again. That has happened repeatedly. I say, I'm really sorry. But you know, and she knows she talked and she burst into tears. And I didn't say, I just said, listen, I'm so sorry. And that's it. It's wonderful. Now, if you're fighting with the students all day, it won't work that well. Okay. And the second one is, if somebody's really bad, just go to the school board. There's no power struggle with you. Please never get in there. Okay. We're not there yet. Relationships. Long term, if you have a good relationship with your students, they're not going to want to disobey you. Think of somebody you love that's older. You just don't want to disobey them because you don't want to disappoint them. You really care about them. That's the kind of relationship I would like you to strive for. And this, unfortunately, doesn't have a lot to do with being cool. All right? Or do you dress like the students? Yeah, you know what? I might wear my Converse every day. I had Converse way before they did anyways. All right? Maybe every once in a while. All right? But, you know, there are those times when for 2 years all they like is Puma anyways, and I'll still wear my Converse. But, you know, don't try to dress like them. Don't try to be like them. Relate to them and be dads and moms and maybe aunts, a little older than them, bigger brothers and sisters. That's what we want to strive for. These are some things that I've done that have worked. I love them. I really do. Okay? Sometimes I get really mad at them. I mean, sometimes when we're playing dodgeball and the gigantic 13-year-old can do nothing to control himself from beaming the ball at second graders. I mean, just knocking them out and bam, bam, there, you know. And he's angry. I get a little frustrated with him. But you know what? I love him. Tell him what they did wrong. Tell him they're staying in. And talk to them after church. When they're sad, especially guy to guy, and man teacher to boy, and lady teacher to lady, when they're sad, ask, are you okay? Is everything okay? And you know what? Maybe it's none of your business. And they might say, no, but I can't talk about it or something. Say, okay. So I care about you. Sometimes they'll just, as we say, vomit on you. They'll tell you everything. And you pray with them, and you love them. And when that happens, I will say this. You never go against their parents. If somebody says, my dad yelled at me this morning, you don't say, what a mean man. You either try to find some way to support that dad, or you just let it go. But you never come between. It feels good sometimes to be like, well, I'm a better authority figure than the parent. Ugh, that's bad. You love their parents too. Give consistent verbal affirmation. Tell them they're great. You know what? I've had a student that just struggled and struggled and struggled, and I would just tell the student that they were great. Yeah, that's where I get it from, y'all that know me. But anyways, I would just, And I finally just, I would say it all the time. And I'm not, and you know, if somebody tells you something nice all the time, you might start thinking, are they just saying that to be nice? What? And then you're like, well, it sure feels good. And you're like, no, they're just saying that. And then you know what? When they say it the 10,000th time, you might start really believing it. And that's what we want. Tell your slow students, say, you are smart. And when they get something right, say, you are a genius. And you know what? They might think they're making fun of me. Well, you say it the next day, they're like, are they making fun of me? 2 weeks later, when you say, you are a genius, you got that thing, I think they're going to start thinking, well, I struggle, but maybe I am a genius. You know? That's the way we need to talk to these people. And I realize, culturally, we don't always pass out the compliments. I say bless them verbally all the time. Let the blessings flow out of your mouth for your students. You know, when they walk by, you know, nice shirt you have on there today. Lady teachers, say to your girls, I like your fabric you have on today. You know, nice shoes, nice Converse, I like Converse. You know, I heard you singing in choir today, you sounded good. Good grade on your paper. You're a great athlete, all right? Your art project was amazing. Say these things all the time. When you gain that love from them, all right, because you love them first, they don't want to disobey you, all right? Stand at the door every morning. When they come in, you get your preparation done early, and you stand at that door and greet every one of them. And if you can, if you have the wherewithal, go say hi to their parents as they drop the children off. All right, for y'all that have 150 people in your school, it might not work, all right? But you pick the 10 parents you want to. Stand at that door every day. I did that when I taught in the Baptist school with 500 people. I'd stand at the door and just say hi to everybody. I made more friends, I think, with students that I never taught. They would just start talking to me. And I remember one of them said, Mr. Swanson, I kind of like it when you stand in the hall and just say hi to everybody. Even if you're 19 years old and you're going to be a teacher this year, you're an adult, okay? You just are above these people. And everybody loves when an adult. Do you really not, are you not kind of glad on Sunday morning when the pastor comes and talks to you? Don't you feel kind of special, most of you? Like the pastor's talking to me? I do. All right? Okay, play with them. Play with them, play with them. I don't want to make them sportsaholics, okay? We don't need that in our culture, okay? But you go out there and play with them and sweat and fall. Just do it. You know, I love frisbee sports. They're just my favorite. Softball's all right and volleyball's all right. I love soccer. Go out and play with the students. And you know what? The picnics, play with the students. When you go to their house, have you guys ever read the, I hope you're okay with me saying guys. To me, that means you all people. Anyways, the primer, the Amish books, you know what I'm talking about, the little ones, where Teacher Dan finally comes to the child's house, and the child said, I saw Teacher Dan's Amish horse, and I knew it was the teacher, and he was coming to my house that day. Do you remember reading that one, any of you? Okay. And I think that's the way the students are. When you go to their house, just go play with them, all right? Hang out and do the adult thing, blah, blah, blah. And then you like the students anyways. Play with them. Be involved in their lives. When I taught in a large school, I would try to go to one of every sport event. I would go to one soccer game, guys' game, a girls' game. I'd try to go to a basketball game, a softball game, everybody's sport. And you know what? The students think you came there to see them. I don't care if there are 15 students out there. I think each 15 of them think that you came to watch them and watch their reaction. And when they're playing softball, they're going to be cool and not look at you. All right? But later, it makes a difference. So as best as you can, if they sing, you go see them sing. You know, if you're not in the youth anymore, if there's a game, you know, go watch them. If they're playing, what's Foursquare? Either go play with them or watch them. Good shot. You're great at Foursquare. I know, who cares if you're great at Foursquare? You're just bashing that ball. But anyways, you bless them that way. Eat lunch with them. We all want to finish grading at lunch. I know, we want to sit there and grade. I like children and youth better than adults. I'll just lay that out and be transparent with you. I just think they're more interesting. The art's still in their mind. The creativity's still there. They make sense to me. Okay? When adults just start talking about work and maybe politics, I'm like, I'll go out and play with 5-year-olds. But sit at lunch with them, guys with guys, girls with girls, and talk about whatever they want to. Just sit with them, okay? Don't eat with your teachers. I know you like to be with your friends too, okay? Don't grade your papers. I know you're behind, and you just want to go home when it's done. Eat lunch with them. When a student gives you a horrible drawing that looks like smeared paint, you put that thing on the side of your desk, and you say, that's interesting. All right. You don't want to lie, but you say, thanks for that. And try not to ask what it is, okay? When they give you little notes, I tell you, notes from children are gold. You know, you should think that even though we make however many $1,000 a year we make as teachers, when they give you a note, you should count that as an extra paycheck. That thing's gold. And you know what they're thinking? My teacher put it there. When they give me something, I'll say, it's going on my desk right now. All right, I'm putting that thing up. And they're like, all right. And you know what? The notes will start showing up if they go to your church in your church mailbox. You put those weird things up, all right? And when they write you notes, it's a blessing. A note on dealing with children and youth. I want you to remember your childhood and how you felt about things. Were you really the big tough guy that was great at sports? Or did you just do that because you want other people to like you? All right, how did you feel when the teacher complimented you? How did you feel when the teacher was kind of mean to you or didn't understand you or just kind of blew you off? And my line from me to 10-year-old Jeff has, I feel like, helped me so much. In some ways, I just think something's the matter with me or something because I just remember these things. But they're just tiny little humans or youth humans. You know, remember what it was like when you were a youth and you're dealing with them. It's worth a lot. All right. Real-life examples. I'd just like to give you a couple of hints. We have about four or five minutes on some practical things to do when things come up in the classroom. The attack of the mass hand-raising nightmare. Have you ever started off sort of with a bad day already? And you're a good actor, because we're teachers. And one of your students, you taught something that was difficult, a concept maybe in math or English diagramming, and the student didn't get it. So you have to stay with them, and they can't get it, but you have to be nice to them, and your head starts to hurt, okay? And so you finally think you get it through them, and then you look up, and you've just got all these people going like this, and you're like, oh, no, this is a disaster. And so I think hand-raising should be under your protocol. I've had times when I told students they could only ask, raise their hand, if it had anything to do with, if it was relevant to what we were talking about. I've made it so that students could only ask a question at a certain time of the day, because I would teach all their lessons, and they'd just start raising their hands. I wanted them to sit there and struggle with it for 15 minutes and then ask me. So I would time it and say, no hand raising until this point, and they'd be like, all right? I know that seems micromanaging, but y'all have all seen when, like, your brain energy is sapped away from you so quickly because hand after hand. So to lighten the mood up a little bit, here are some notable hand raisers. I've had these. First one is, miss, I raise my hand when I start having to think or else my brain will start to hurt. You ever had a student that once something gets a little bit difficult, they want it explained to him? We've got to train him out of that. Mister, I have a private story to tell you, but I will say it a bit louder than I need to so the whole class can hear. So students like, Mr. Swanson, especially if they're related to you, like they're like, okay, when I get home, I'm going to take my remote control car apart, and then I'm going to mix it with this other helicopter that I have, and suddenly everybody's looking at them, and then what I'm going to have is a remote control car and a motorcycle and a helicopter. And you're like, they just wanted to talk to everybody. You have those? All right. Mr., the score key says I'm wrong. Is the score key wrong? You know, some of our books that we use, it's like the 7th edition, and they always seem to have found out that they're right and that the score key is wrong, and it's always the same person. So you have to go over there and figure the problem out. No, you're wrong again. It wasn't the score key, but good try. And here's my favorite, and this guy was actually the same guy that said the Mr. The score key says I'm wrong. Is the score key wrong? Mister, my hand has a sensor that knows when you're about to walk by, and it automatically goes up when you enter a 5-foot perimeter that surrounds my desk. I had a guy, and I kid you not, I mean, he would be working on his work, and I would sneak by him, and he wouldn't look up, and right when I was in that perimeter, he'd go like that. And so I'd answer his question, and then I'd come back later, and I'd honestly, I wouldn't look at him, I'd try not to, and he wouldn't look at me, and the thing would go up over and over. So I think it's fair to set boundaries for your students and say, I can't always answer. And sometimes you might want to say, I feel like you could do this without me, but you're really using me as a crutch. All right? Okay. A couple strategies. Do not let them find your buttons. You know what buttons are? Push your button. Okay? I'm short, but that's not one of my buttons. I don't know what my buttons are, actually, but do you think you have a funny nose? All right? If a student makes fun of your nose, are you going to lose it? All right? Do you think that, are you shorter than you wish you were? Guys, if a student says, Mr. Swanson, you're awful short, are you going to lose it and melt down? Girls, are you tall? If a student says, how tall are you, Mrs. Such and Such, are you going to lose it and cry? All right? The best thing to ever do is always never to let them find your button and never let your button get pushed. So what to do if they make fun of you? You could cry. You could yell at the student and punish them publicly on the spot. That's a joke. Okay. Better yet, you could agree with them and laugh along. You know, I used to have all these basketball boys say, Mr. Swanson, you sure are short. And I'd be like, what? I'm short? You're right, I'm short. And they'd be like, and, you know, and I think I had one student, for some reason, said that I wasn't very attractive or ugly or something. And I think I said, yeah, I kind of agree. I'm really not that good looking of a person. And he was like, and so, you know, just, I mean, if you beat on him and say, that's disrespectful, even if it is, maybe later you could tell him, you're going to, anyways, here's my last one. This works very well with naughty students. Quietly whisper to the offender, you're in trouble. I will talk to you about it later. Try not think about it. This works for any offense, okay? If a student does something very naughty in school, you know we really shouldn't berate them in front of people. Just come up and whisper to them, you're in trouble. I'm going to talk to you about it later. Try not to think about it. Okay, that student's not going to cause you any trouble until you talk about that. The only thing you're going to hear from that trouble is at lunch they're going to say, please just tell me. I don't care what it is. Kick me out of school. You've got to tell me. And so it is a good one to be used occasionally. And don't tell them. So don't have much time. I had a few at the end. I want to make a note on a consistent consistency. I've known more people that have left Mennonites, left the Anabaptists, and you've all heard it, and gone to something else. Not that there aren't other things that aren't Anabaptists. I want to validate all forms of Christianity, but we'd like them to stay because there was somebody that was a hypocrite. Okay? And so if you make rules, stick to them. When the most popular dominant person that you want on your side breaks a rule, you got to punish him. Okay? Because Mr. Low Self-Esteem, if he gets punished and Mrs. I'm the most popular cool girl in school doesn't get punished, they're just looking at you and it's hurting them. So I would encourage you to be consistent with your rules and your structure, because in all things considered, you don't want to be the straw that broke the camel's back, that this person's like, you know what? My dad was a hypocrite. I feel like my pastors were hypocrites. And now my teacher's a hypocrite. I hate the Mennonites. You know? Hopefully the dad's great, and hopefully the pastors are great, and they love the teacher, and they love the school. Please talk to me now, or at lunch, or at the next break, or after we're done today, or email me. We have a blog spot. We've chronicled all the things that we've done, más o menos, for the past 3 years or so that's on there. That's a Google account, so you can add me on Google Plus, and I will add you back. And you can email me that way. I would love to talk. You can talk to my wife and make contact. So blessings to you all, and have a good day. You are dismissed.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.